The great Gabriella Lewis is here to talk all things Atlanta Dream. Locked On Women's Basketball starts now.
Ogumba Wale for the win.
You are Locked On Women's Basketball, your daily podcast on women's basketball.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to Locked On Women's Basketball. I'm your host, Howard Meddahl, thanking you for making us your first listen every day. You guys showed out in April, over 100,000 listens in April alone. We are on track to break that here in May. Really excited about all of it, and thank you for making us your first listen every day. Not just me, of course. It is the incredible team over at The Next Hoops, thenexthoops.com, where we have over 100 reported pieces on women's basketball every single month, along with six podcasts a week. And we have somebody on every single WNBA beat, team by team. Gabriella Lewis killing it once again over in the Atlanta Dream side. And I guess, Gabriella, when we think about this Dream team, I wonder how different the vibes are for a team that, as Dan Padover, the GM who joined us last week, said, you know, has legitimate playoff aspirations.
Yeah, the vibes are different this year in a lot of ways. I mean, first of all, people came into training camp this year knowing something about Coach Wright, knowing something about the system, where last season there was starting from absolute zero. And with that, also, you know, I asked almost every single player, what are your personal goals and what are your team goals? And winning was basically always the team goal. And for most, playoffs, at least, you know, stating that. And so last year, there were zero expectations on this team. If they won any game, which they did quite a few, especially right off the bat, it was like, oh, my God, the Dream won. How exciting. Whereas this year, there's more expectations. You know, I don't think, you know, you don't have the same expectations the Aces do, but you obviously have a level of they're different. They're going to win. They added some important pieces. And so I think great expectations can sometimes be a little scary, right? They've only won one game this season. And I think there's a little bit of a different vibe, at least, you know, from this coverage standpoint of last year, even when they were losing, it was like, okay, that's kind of what you're expected. And now it's a little bit different.
It is fascinating. So in segment one, we're going to get into some of the newcomers who are responsible for that change in vibes, that change in expectation. Segment two is going to be about some of the returners and their improvements as well. But the place I want to start is somebody who is a newcomer, who is still getting accustomed to the lead, and somebody who you wrote a great story about that is just up over at thenexthoops.com. And that is Haley Jones. And so take me through, if you can, among other things, what it has meant for Haley Jones to have in Danielle Robinson, not just a veteran, but somebody who went to the same high school she did.
Yeah. Yeah. So Haley Jones gets drafted number six to the Atlanta Dream. Renee Montgomery on draft night said to me, Haley Jones was on my Christmas list. So they were very excited to get her. She comes out of Stanford. She went to Archbishop Mitty High School in San Jose. And the person who also went to Archbishop Mitty was Danielle Robinson. And Danielle Robinson, 11-year vet, was up on the wall at Mitty all of Haley's career. And Haley talked to me a lot about this of, you know, she would look up every day and she'd think, icon, oh my God, like that's the OG Mitty great. And I asked her, you know, at that moment, could you ever imagine maybe sharing a locker room with her? And Haley said to me, you know, I didn't even think about playing pro till we won a championship. I think there was not any expectation that they would be together, but Dana Robinson said to media a couple weeks ago that, you know, every time she was home, she tried to make it to a mini game. She tried to play pickup with Haley. She tried to really push her. And so I think neither of them really expected maybe that they'd be together, but it's a really beautiful story of, you know, seeing the icon up on the wall every day in practice. And then now you're on the court with them.
It is delightful to see. And I love that she has that comfort. And you captured it so well. She seems to have a comfort from home in Atlanta. And we heard that from her directly on draft night when I had the chance to see her in New York after she was the sixth overall pick. But kind of take me through what that looks like in practice, the, let's say, the Haley Jones fam, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah. Yeah. So Haley's told media and myself a lot that she's got a lot of family all throughout Georgia. You know, I thought such a sweet moment, I believe, on draft night or in the first weeks of training camp, she was said, you know, I was supposed to be a bridesmaid in my cousin's wedding, and now I'm actually going to get to go because I live in Georgia. And so that's coming up. But yeah, you know, the Jones fam are, you know, are, they're out. Absolutely. They're coming to games. They had, we had our home, they had their home opener on Sunday. And Haley Jones was, had a greeting line for 30 minutes, probably. You know, she told me that her great aunt was there for the first time since high school. And then she also had these Stanford folks, right? She was playing against Lexi Hull, who was her Stanford teammate. She had some other folks there. She embraced Aaliyah Boston, who's her longtime friend, who's playing for the Fever. And so also, I think what's so fun is, you know, Haley Jones's cousin is Talisha Milton Jones, who's, you know, a WNBA great, played nearly 500 games over, what, 15 years. And so the Jones fam, they know how to produce winners, and they know a WNBA star. And, you know, Haley talked to me about how she watched the W growing up, but she grew up in the Bay Area, right? Like myself, where there's no WNBA. And so she said that, you know, she hadn't really gone to a lot of games, but she'd always kind of kept an eye on it. And it's pretty cool to be here now for her.
Something, and I don't know if anybody's brought this up, but maybe there could be expansion into the Bay Area for the WNBA.
Maybe. I wouldn't be mad at it.
No, I don't know anyone who would be mad at it. Oh, man, here's hoping. But as we move beyond Haley Jones, who obviously understands the need to pay her dues and to keep working and has always had that pro mentality, frankly, has had that pro mentality dating back to high school, she also has the opportunity to see somebody who, in the way I put it to Dan last week, was has a chance to be a number one option on a championship team. And I don't know that we've necessarily come to understand the level that Alicia Gray has already reached in her career. But, and while with the full caveat that win shares is a flawed stat, that if you're looking for a catch-all stat, she is 17th in the entire league since 2017 in win shares. She is somebody who is an elite defender who shoots north of 40% from three. And I guess I just wonder whether you've seen early on her manifest herself as that legit number one option on this dream team.
Totally. I mean, like I said, I asked all the players what their personal goals were. And most personal goals are like a little bit more abstract. And Alicia Gray immediately said to me, I want to be an all-star. And she said, you know, I felt like I was on the cusp of everything. I felt like my defense was really good. I felt like, but it was just on the cusp of being great. My, you know, I was just on the cusp of being an all-star. And so I think that that's really what Alicia is coming in with, is she, and then she said to us the other day, you know, I'm actually really happy here. And that's a quote, I'm actually happy. And I asked her, you know, I followed up. I was like, she said, I said, you know, what is kind of, is this different? She said, it's a fresh start. It's clean. And so I think she seems to be in a place where she's really motivated and she's putting up the numbers to show it. I mean, like you said, has incredible win share numbers. Over the three games, she's averaging 18.3 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, right? If those aren't all-star numbers, I'm not sure what is. And so I think she's coming in with this hunger of, I'm on the cusp. I want to be, you know, the best of the best. And I think this is a really good system for her, especially opposite Ryan Howard.
Mm-hmm. She is even, and again, but we understand Alicia and Ryan to be the indispensable players for Atlanta early on. And we're going to get to Ryan in segment two, because there's a lot that's worth examining about it, about her rise. But Alicia specifically, you know, the thing that jumps out to me is that assist percentage of 24.4%, that she has accepted the mantle of being that top scorer, but it does not, at least from the from a distance, seem like she is forcing things at all. And so is that your impression as well? This is somebody who, you know, you're saying the system is good for her, but it seems like also she's good for the system, that she is integrated into that in a way that maybe is faster than you had reason to expect.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely agree. I think she fits so well into the system. And I think when I think of the offseason moves of the Dream, you know, since the Pat Overwright era, it's extremely calculated. You know, I kind of thought they were going to sign a someone at a free agency, big name. You know, I always joked about Tina, not joked, talked about Tina Charles because she has this connection with Wright. And, you know, they got Gray out of a trade. And some folks criticized the trade because they thought it was, you know, the Dreamer maybe giving away too much. But I think that was very calculated on Pat Over's part, right? To get this player that fits so specifically in the system. She ended up signing an extension, so she'll be here longer, which I think kind of adds to that. Presumably that was adding to the trade. And so I think, yeah, she fits so well and she's adding so much to the system that, you know, right now also like some of the offense isn't clicking as well. And without her, I'm not really sure where it would be. You know, I think to Sunday night, there were some moments where there was some kind of stagnant in the offense and then Ryan or Alicia hits a, you know, a three and they are back in the game. And so I think she's been absolutely crucial. And I think she's also just really learning the system, you know. She's a little bit shy from her own words. And so, but Coach Wright told us the other day that, you know, Ryan was the first person she reached out to was Alicia. And she also has such a relationship with Nas from Athletes Unlimited. And so the three of them have kind of really come together off the court as well.
There are a lot of teams that use the word culture, right? Mm. But ultimately, you're either doing it or you're not. It seems very obvious to me that Atlanta has walked the walk on this, not just talked the talk on it. So I want to talk about those players who were there already as well in segment two. But first, I do need to let the good people at home know about Game Time. And no, I was not ultimately able to utilize Game Time to get tickets to Taylor Swift that were affordable enough for me, a journalist, to take my older daughter and Swifty to. That does not mean that it was hard to know what tickets were available and Game Time was as good as any of them, right? Because you can not only use that app to be able to see what tickets are available, but you're able to see where you're sitting, how that would all work. And so we're going to use it for other events. Along the way, we've used it for Broadway, when I take them to baseball games, basketball games, last minute, was able to use that, you know, even there was a Liberty Sun game this weekend, and I was able to get my younger daughter, who is a Breanna Stewart super fan, to approve, to sign off on our view of the court. She wanted to sit back behind the Liberty huddle, effectively. And we were able to see, oh, that's where that was going to be. And we did that together. If you want to do the same, of course, you download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code LOCKEDONNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code LOCKEDONNBA for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. So, getting back to the players who were there already, and I know we've talked about this off the air too, just about that Ryan Howard is somebody who was so impressive as a rookie, had more tools at her disposal, and year one to year two is a period of growth as much as any other for WNBA players in general. My initial impression, just watching observationally, was her shot seemed smoother to me as well. We haven't yet seen it manifest itself in the season numbers, but the season numbers are so early and so young. I'm just wondering, like, what are you seeing off the bat of Ryan Howard in year two? And what is she saying about it?
The first preseason game, I sat down with Ryan and, you know, kind of one-on-one spoke with her. And it was kind of a new Ryan, honestly. You know, as a rookie, Ryan was pretty quiet. You know, she wasn't always, you know, comfortable with media. And it was astounding, right? She kind of, I think, has really grown into her own in this league. And I think you even see this in Twitter in the offseason, right? She was, you know, joking constantly, talking with her teammates. And, you know, I even spoke with Coach Wright and PR folks. I was like, wow, that's a whole new Ryan. And so I think she has really, you know, it's her sophomore year in the league. She has really kind of settled in, I think, and she has already shown herself as a leader of the team. And so, you know, the first three games have been, she's still putting up what, 17 points on average. Yeah. So not bad by any means. I think she had a couple of moments where, you know, she wasn't getting to the rim as much, or she wasn't getting to the line as much. But she's still, I think, has really grown into her own. And like you said, her shot is looking really good as well. And so, and I just think she's taken on this leadership. Like, she is kind of that star player. She's the face of the franchise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other night it didn't end up successful, but they ran a play, this elevator screen, they ran this play for her with the final 16.7 seconds on the clock. They were down 3 to the Fever. You know, she has that three. She ends up not making it, but, you know, she is the person they're going to go to. And I think folks have known that, but it's become very solidified in a lot of ways. I think that this is Ryan's team's.
A willingness to do that at age 23 is a really big deal.
Yeah.
That in and of itself is something significant. I also just, and we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming schedule, but there are people like, oh my God, they lost to the Fever, who had lost 20 straight. And it's just, and I've been saying it on this show. The Fever are a really good team. The Fever are much improved. The Fever, I believe, are going to ultimately make the playoffs this year. Aaliyah Boston is, I know, hot take, right? That is my hottest take, is that the Fever will make the playoffs this year. And we'll see if I'm right.
They looked great on Sunday, so yeah.
Come in and get a win like that. That's how you get to the playoffs. But Aaliyah Boston is exactly what she was in college and then some, because she's not being triple teamed. And so you're seeing her efficiency go up exponentially. She's still grabbing the rebound. She's still where she needs to be defensively. Our SEC reporter had a lot to say about Aaliyah Boston over the course of the college season. It was also you, actually, as I'm looking at this. Yes. Yeah, no, true story. And so Indiana's very good. That is not a bad loss. It's not easy to win in this league. And when you look at what's coming up, you got Chicago, who's been very good early.
Yeah.
And then I've heard in passing some things about the New York Liberty and the Las Vegas Aces, who come next on the schedule. So those are some big ones. Are those, I don't know. People are like, oh, is it a statement win? And it's like, not really, because you still got to win a lot and it's 40 games. But like, do you think you will learn a lot about who the Dream are from this upcoming homestand?
So much. I mean, there's like, I'm leaving for a game in a couple hours, right? Tonight they play at 7. I think today is going to be a huge decider, right? They lose their two preseason games. They lose their opener to Dallas, and then they make a 19-point comeback to the Lynx, which is, I believe, the biggest comeback in Dream history. And I will say, last season, they had basically no ability to make a comeback, right? If they were down at half, every single game they lost. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big deal. But then they lose to the Fever, where they were up at the half and, you know, kind of lost it in those last. So I think Coach Wright has talked a lot about how they need to just do the little things right. They need to get tough. You know, they've reduced turnovers a little bit in that last game. And so I think if they come out today fiery, if they, you know, show Chicago, I think this is an absolutely winnable game, right? And that's also the thing about the Dream, is they also last year were able to win against tough opponents, right? They beat the Aces on the Aces home court. They beat Seattle and Atlanta. And, you know, that's the cool part about sports, but it was really the cool part about Dream, right? Is you show up and you have no idea what's going to happen. So I think tonight is going to be big, and then going up against the Aces and the Liberty as well. And I think, you know, you could argue that maybe the Dream, they also really rise to the occasion in some ways.
It's interesting to me when you talk about the Aces and the Liberty, because to me, I think one of the things we're going to learn the most about is Cheyenne Parker's value, and maybe some showing out here allows the league to fully see it. And I have been delighted to cover Cheyenne for a long time. Cheyenne is continually reinventing herself, but you look at what she has done so far and it takes it to another level. You know, she has always been an efficient scorer, but she's at 17 a game so far this year, even as she's shooting 50% from the field. You know, this is somebody who is making her free throws at almost a 90% clip, and she's not sacrificing the ability to battle inside in the process. She's even dishing the ball out more than we've ever seen before. So we can talk Alicia Gray, all-star, and that is kind of a shocking thing, especially when you think of framing it off the top as like 17th in the league in win shares over that time. You look at the company she's keeping, and everyone's all-stars around on that list. Cheyenne Parker might well be making the case in just the same way.
Cheyenne looks so good. I mean, she looked really good last year. And this season, I mean, particularly in that game on Sunday, like when she's on. And I think, you know, she was really beating herself up for some moments she had that, you know, didn't go her way. But they kept themselves in the game because of Cheyenne. And I think she's still getting her legs back a little bit. She was overseas, you know, then came back. And so I think she still has to, you know, kind of work herself up. But she has been looking really, really good. And she's just so much that veteran presence, right? She's been in the league for, I believe, 9 years, right? She has had a long career. And yeah, no, she's just so fantastic inside. And, you know, she doesn't always, like, I think sometimes she's better at the four, but she's playing more of the five, and she's yeah. looking really good. I think I'd love to see Cheyenne as an all-star. You know, I think that would be very exciting for her and her long career.
I also think part of what gives Coach Wright the flexibility to do that is Naz Hillman's further development.
And, yeah.
Well, neither of us get tired of talking about Naz Hillman and her development, you know, first at Michigan and now what she's doing here in Atlanta. But it is worth noting she's in double figures in scoring off the bench. She is whatever. And I heard this in some corners of the WNBA was, oh, she's not going to be tall enough to be able to do this, yeah. you know, ignoring the wingspan, ignoring everything else about her and focusing on that. She's clearly somebody who is capable of being a critical rotation big on a playoff team. And, yeah. you know, are you seeing more from her this year off the court too? You know, take me through what the Naz Hillman experience has been like.
Totally. I mean, I see the same thing with Naz as I see Ryan. You know, like, I think she's made this her team. She's extremely comfortable. And I think, you know, that when they were making cuts, there was some questions of, you know, who was going to go, right? They had to make a few cuts. And so to me, I was like, there's no way I think Naz doesn't make the team just because she's such a glue of the culture and she's really grown into her own. And then also, I think, you know, her shooting's also looking much better, right? In AU, she was making some threes, you know, Ryan was telling her to make those on the court at an Atlanta. But no, I think she both on and off the court has really grown into her own. And it's so interesting, right? My first ever piece with the Dream like a year ago was about Naz. And I think so much about how, you know, she looking at her numbers then, it's an kind of undescribed or, you know, it's very different from what they are now. And they were just talking the other day because, you know, I asked a question about, you know, Letitia and me here has not played yet. And Tanisha was like, yeah, that's what happens with rookies. You know, you don't play that much. And Naz kind of jumped in and was like, yeah, I didn't really play that much the first part of my season. And so I think she's seen tremendous growth. And it was very much trial by fire at the end of the season because so many people got hurt, right? They had very few players. Yeah. And so I think she got those reps and now it's just come in with a new level of confidence. And I think you can just see that her game is going to grow, not only as a big, but also where, you know, her shooting on the floor.
In Naz's first 11 games with the Atlanta Dream, she had double figures only four times and only five times and a max of 18 minutes per game. She played 19:07 in her 12th game and didn't play single digits the rest of the year. By the end of the year, she's playing 30 plus minutes routinely. Yeah. So that is a very common occurrence. Will be fascinating to see. And yes, Letitia should hang in there. Haley Jones should hang in there because Coach Wright will find him. She will. That's for sure. It is delightful to chat with you always. Make sure people, if you're following @_Gabriella with two L's, Lewis, Lewis, if you are not watching us on YouTube. And thank you to all of you for making us your first listen every day, today included. Make sure you come back tomorrow. The great Matthew Walter joins us. Matthew reporting this past weekend from the Las Vegas Aces banner raising, here to talk about all things Aces, a fascinating team in their own right, who you're going to get a chance to see very soon as well down in Atlanta.
Oh, so, absolutely.
Excited for all of that. And thank you for all the work you do. Thank you to our listeners. We will be back with you tomorrow as we are 6 days a week. We are always here to do the work. Until then, I am Howard Meddahl wishing all of you a wonderful Tuesday.
Ogumba Wale for the win.
You are Locked On Women's Basketball, your daily podcast on women's basketball.